Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to From the Touchline in Seattle. I'm Todd Stauber. He's Aaron Heinzen.
Hey.
He's here as usual.
Yes.
We are in Seattle. It's a cold morning here in Seattle. And we just got so much to get to. Pete Fewing coming on the show later, 9:45 to talk MLS. Pete Fewing, Seattle Sounder FC TV personality and the head coach at Seattle University. Looking forward to having Pete on. We got a lot to get to, though. We're gonna start with the Champions League. Draw came out this morning. It was gonna be a dream draw, however we looked at this. There was really gonna be no bad pairing here. I mean, we have a final four of a dream group. It includes the league leaders in Spain, Germany, and Italy, along with the reigning champion of this competition, Real Madrid. A combined 21 European Cups and 108 league titles between the four teams, Heinzo.
That's pretty good.
What do you think about this draw? Talk to me.
Well, I secretly was hoping for a Bayern Munich-Barcelona final.
You actually weren't secretly hoping. You made that clear this week.
But yeah, I wanted that.
You just didn't tell UEFA, you mean? You didn't let them know?
Yeah, okay. I wanted to pass along. I was cheering for PSG originally, but when it became clear they weren't going to make it, Barcelona, great. Barcelona-Bayern Munich final would have been great. But I'll take the semifinal, no problem. And we've discovered there's never been a Real Madrid-Barcelona Champions League final.
Ooh,
so that would be something.
That would be
that
special.
Would be great. I personally would like to see Guardiola's side, Bayern Munich, kind of a Real Madrid-Bayern Munich final in the end. But, I mean, it's a fantastic matchup. By the way, we got, like you said, big leaders. Juventus are running away with it in Italy.
Yep.
Barcelona, two-point lead at the moment. Real Madrid, returning champions. And then you've got Bayern Munich, who won it 2 years ago. And, or, you know.
Well, and there's a lot of subplots here as well.
So
we talked about it pre-show. I mean, you've got obviously Pep going against his former club, mm-hmm. but you've also got Ancelotti going against his former club in Juve, who they sacked him when he didn't win a thing except for the Intertoto Cup.
Is that still going on?
The Intertoto Cup. Like, didn't they sing the song Africa?
I don't think it's even there anymore.
So, you know, it all kicks off May 5th, May 6th are the first games in Turin, first leg, Real Juve in the new camp, or the Camp Nou, as some like to call it. Mm-hmm. Bayern Barca, May 6th. Then we flip around, ending at the Allianz, Bayern Barca on May 12th, the very next week, and Real Juve at the Bernabeu, May 13th. I can't say enough about those games. I'm very much looking forward to watching those games. Let's talk about how we arrived at this place. Obviously, going in, let's talk Barca, PSG, going in 3-1. You know, it was going to be difficult for PSG. We knew that. They knew that.
Yeah.
Everybody knew that. The only guy that didn't know that was Colin Rigby, who bet me 40 push-ups that they would come back in. And
unlucky, Colin.
He sent me a great video of those 40 push-ups.
Yeah,
but, you know, it really started in the first half. It was done. Iniesta, what a great run from him.
Yeah.
Showing some pace that, I mean, I didn't even know he ever had it, let alone at this age. But broke through in the midfield. Slipped the ball into Neymar, who, no, what do you know? David Luiz was out of shape for PSG. Great finish. He, you know, dribbled the keeper, finished. Later in that half, Neymar found the net with his head. Dani Alves chopped it back in and served with his non-preferred left foot. Great header, great goal. 2-0 at half, 5-1 on aggregate. It was done at that point.
It was over, yeah. It was over, I think, even before they got there, even with Ibrahimovic back in the team and Marco Berardi back in. It was just going to be too much. Barcelona were relaxed. They knew what they needed to do. Thiago Mota's not there. Thiago Silva's not there for PSG.
Yeah.
It was just, in the end, it was going to be too much for them. And I think it's also a case of PSG have a great squad. They have a big squad. But, they, you know, they're not quite there. They're not quite there. And they're set to win the French treble.
Yeah, they are.
So that's a lot of competitions, again, a lot of games.
The games have added up for them. And they don't really have the squad to do it. Another thing we talked about in watching the game, you really saw Edinson Cavani that he's not really a world-class player, I don't think, at this level. You know, I mean, he just
struggled to make a difference.
He really did struggle to make a difference in either of these games. And, you know, I mean, yeah, fair enough. Maybe he didn't have great games. But I just feel like, you know, for Edinson Cavani, he's just not one of those top level strikers, you know?
They needed a big game from him in the first game.
They did, and he wasn't able to do it.
Chances. So, yeah, you don't get on the board against them other than that final goal that they had in the first game in Paris, which was just a mistake. You know,
yeah, it was an own goal.
They never looked really that dangerous.
Right.
I think, and everybody knew, you know, Barcelona have the edge back.
Well, and they're, I mean, Barca's playing, they're in form right now. Well. They're playing very well right now. I mean, and it just goes to show you, I mean, Suarez did him in the first leg. It's Neymar that have done him now. I mean, you're not even talking about Messi at this point, you know? Right.
And yet he's still
there. And I mean, he could have crushed you at any time. So Barca looking good going in. I mean, I think, you know, this matchup with Bayern is going to be fantastic.
The amount of combinations and players you can see. And it's like you said, Pep Guardiola returns to Barcelona.
Yeah.
The last time these two teams met, it was 7-0 aggregate for Bayern Munich, which was on their way to their treble.
Right.
But that was back when, you know, Barcelona's still kind of picking up the pieces from the departure of Guardiola. So they're on their heels. So now you've got a rejuvenated team, a former teammate of Guardiola's, coaching them.
Yeah.
And doing a great job. And they have one of the most potent attacks right now with Messi and Neymar and Suarez.
Well, it's going to be, I mean, it's just going to be such a, just a sensational game tie. Let's talk a little bit about Bayern, because one of the reasons it's going to be so sensational is because Bayern backs against the wall.
Yeah.
Going back home to the Allianz, you know, down 3-1 on aggregate. I mean, this was done in 22 minutes. It was over. Thiago, who his resurgence and return to their lineup has been such a huge lift for them, especially with Ribery and Robin out. You know, he really incited it all. 14th minute, he gets one. Boateng gets one in the 22nd. I mean, it's over right there. Yeah. I mean, they've got the away goal. It's tied right there. But they kept going. Lewandowski on the 27th minute. Thomas Müller becoming the all-time leading German scorer in the Champions League over Mario Gomez with that goal. And then he provides another for Robert Lewandowski at 40. I mean, we're 5-0 at half.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable response.
I don't even know what to say about that.
You thought, you know, and for a minute, actually, in the second half, credit to Porto coming back and Jackson Martinez getting a goal. And I for a second, and Porto had them on their heels, thought, you know, they could – it's a possibility.
We were watching it together, and we were looking at both TVs, and I remember us looking over going, wow, Porto's getting a little bit of the run of play here in the second half. And they did gain a little run of the play, but Xabi Alonso in the 88th really put, you know – with the free kick, just put kind of the nail in the coffin. And, you know, Porto, it's great.
Yeah, I get, you know, thanks for coming, Porto. Yeah, it was a good effort.
Thanks for coming out.
I just had too many injuries.
Really unfortunate that you had to play Bayern going back in that situation. It's just not a good thing.
An interesting thing, too, was at the end after that game was when the Bayern came over, the team came over and sat in front. Everybody got down on their knees on the field in front of the crowd. And Thomas Müller went over and grabbed a microphone, and they all led in the song.
Yeah.
It was just an amazing-looking scene.
It was actually a megaphone. It wasn't even a microphone. He just nicked it off one of the fans, and, it was great. A great picture of him hanging from the stands. Mm-hmm. And
the whole team singing the song, and just – it's that kind of real belief you can tell, and the crowd are so involved with them. And so you think about that second leg against Barcelona, and –
it's going to be unbelievable.
And the combination's already running through your head when you see that.
Well, I mean, so many questions. I mean, we've got, you know, a week or so, we have a week and a half until this. Mm-hmm. Are Robin and Ribery back? Does Schweinsteiger play? Yeah. What happens to Lewandowski? What do we do with Mario Götze? There's just so many questions and so many great players involved in this. And it's just going to be, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I'm just very excited for this. And, you know, going back to Thomas Müller, I mean, this guy's only 25 years old.
Yeah.
He's done some incredible things in the game. I mean, he's an awkward looking guy. I mean, if he walked in, you know, to a bar or something and you looked at him, you'd be like, who's this guy? You know, you're not going to think that's the all-time leading scorer of all Germans in the Champions League at age 25.
Yeah.
He's won a Champions League. He's won a World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has done amazing things in the game so far. I just think this Bayern team going into this match with Pep Guardiola, the confidence that they obviously have after coming back 3-1, and then combining that with Barca in form and the way they're feeling, I mean, this is explosive.
I think the biggest question I've got is who's going to keep the ball in this game? Who's going to keep the ball between Bayern Munich and Barcelona? Both sides. I mean, Guardiola's got them playing
We might have to play this with two balls. Yeah. We might have to have two balls in this game.
It's going to be unbelievable because who can't, you know, you can't see a messy Barcelona without controlling the ball with Iniesta in there. But how are they going to get it off these guys? Get it off Munich. And like you said, the battles in between the Bayern back line, you know, Alaba's still injured. So they're going to have some questions there for sure. But, you know, Barcelona doesn't have the greatest back line all the time. You know, they're not the fastest. They're going to have to deal with, like you said, Götze. If Robin gets back, that's another nightmare for them. Lewandowski with the power up top against PK, Mascherano. I mean, does Jeremy Mathieu come in? It's endless. You could talk about
it. It is endless. Well, and is Dante going to be in there?
I don't think Dante will be there after the Portugal game. You know, he might be.
I mean, Batstuber played very well at center back. Yeah, and I think that I just can't see Dante in the fold.
I have no, I mean, who knows what he's
going to do. I'd like to see Dante if I was a Barca fan.
I mean, you could do a whole show on who could possibly play. I mean, Xabi Alonso back playing against Barcelona from his Real Madrid days. Thiago Alcantara, who they know very well, Barcelona, and grew up there, and says, you know, he's got nothing but love for the club, but he's gonna have to play against him and try and beat him.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait for it. Let's go on to the other guys. Juventus Monaco. You know, a game that we watched. 1-0, all Monaco needed was the goal. They looked very good. Berbatov came on at halftime, was dangerous as he came on. And, Monaco pressed, but at the end of the day, I mean, they just, you know, Pirlo, Buffon, Tevez, it was just they just couldn't break him down. And, you know, I was kind of wanting Monaco. I kind of wanted him to slip in there just to see it, but I can't be disappointed with, you know, getting to watch Pirlo and getting to watch this Juve Real tie, because I think that Juve is running away with the Italian league. Juve is kind of the quiet team of this four. Definitely, you know, they haven't made a lot of headlines this year, but at the same time, I mean, you look at their squad and it's mostly a good portion of the Italian national team. Mm-hmm. And you've got a great player in Pirlo who is literally timeless. I mean, and then you also have Buffon in goal.
Yeah.
A man who's never won the Champions League, and everything that he's accomplished in his great career, never won the Champions League.
Yeah, which is amazing. And there was also a nice twist too. I mean, you're talking about Ancelotti, but there's Morata, who's the striker for Juventus and just came from Real Madrid last year. And people were actually wondering, did Real Madrid make a mistake letting him go? Because, you know, with Benzema's injury, obviously, Chicharito stepping in there, but Alvaro Morata is going to be a real handful for them with that combination with Tevez, and then you got Llorente coming off the bench, most likely. Vidal,
Arturo Vidal,
Arturo Vidal, exactly. So Juventus has some talented players, and Real Madrid, hold them off. That will be the big question, but
We start in Turin.
We haven't even talked about Paul Pogba.
Well, no, we haven't.
I'm not sure if he'll be back.
Yeah, and we're not sure if he will be back. And yeah, you're right. We haven't talked about Paul Pogba. He could be a major player in this when we go back. And let's just talk Real. Going into what an amazing night at the Bernabeu. Mm-hmm. We looked at the picture of the Bernabeu they took in the morning. They had it up on Twitter, we were looking at it with our English correspondent Andy Machen, I mean, it didn't even look real. We were saying it looked like Hogwarts. It's like it looked like they were taking a picture, getting ready for like a Quidditch match or something. The field looked unbelievable. And when they showed that stadium and all those white things that they were waving in that stadium before the match, I mean, I was getting butterflies just seeing it. Of course, then I looked at the TV next to it and saw the stadium in Monaco, and those butterflies went away really quickly. But the difference, the contrast in the two environments was great. God, what a night and what a game. You know, I thought, you know, Atletico, obviously, just very good defensively. I mean, Godin, I mean, he looks like a guy he looks like a goat herder, you know, but this guy is unbelievable. I mean, talk about a guy who, if he walked in, you wouldn't guess he was a soccer player. Yeah. If he walked into any bar, people would be thinking like, oh, the guy's here to deliver a couple kegs, or, you know, the janitor showed up to clean the bathrooms. And this guy is one of the better defenders in the world.
Yeah, Atletico, it was, in the end, it was tough. I was surprised to see Griezmann go off, you know, the top scorer. I thought
I was as well.
That was interesting. But, yep. just didn't get it right this time. It was Real's turn, and I think maybe Real had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder knowing that Modric was going to be out, Bale was going to be out, and didn't have Benzema either. So yeah, they really had to dig in. I think that maybe kind of helped them mentally.
Well, I think so too, and a surprise start with Chicharito. I mean, yeah, we had been texting that morning talking about how he wasn't even in the conversation, just proving how little we know about the world of soccer. And I will say, you know, Chicharito, in playing probably what was his last game for Real Madrid. He played well. He was dangerous. He put himself about. Obviously, he got the goal. You know, 80th minute. It was a great combination between Ronaldo and James Rodriguez. I mean, it was. They created the goal. Ronaldo's in. He's being pulled down. You know, he placed Chicharito. You know, Chicharito came off his run a little bit and opened up and put himself in a good spot. Got a good finish. And let's talk about the celebration. Because there seems to be a little bit.
I was excited for him. I was excited for Chicharito. It's going to be the best goal he's ever scored, biggest goal he's ever scored.
For sure.
In his career.
It'll be the biggest goal he ever scores. Yeah.
We'll see where he ends up next year. But I thought,
you're not going to score a bigger goal than that at Stoke or Southampton. Yeah. And that's where he's going to end up next year.
We'll see where he we'll see where he ends up.
And at the Stadium of Light, he scores.
And I didn't, you know, there was, as we were watching the game, Jake Sagar actually called that Javier Hernandez was going to get a goal. I didn't believe him.
Well, he is known to be a prophet at times, Jake Sagar. So, you know, he did call it. He did call it. Jake. Yeah, well done, Jake. Of course, it was only either him or Ronaldo that was going to score. He was picking between two people. So, but, you know, Thierry Henry, you know, who now gets his chance to be on TV and crush people, crushed Chicharito for not including Ronaldo in his celebration. Well, I look at it two ways. I mean, obviously, Chicharito, he's been out on an island for not just this year with Real Madrid, but he was last year and the year before with Manchester United. He's been starving for these chances and these opportunities to play in big games. So I understand his excitement, the elation that he clearly felt. But let's be honest, you took one touch and stuffed it in. Ronaldo did all the work. At least give him a little love, I would say. Plus, here's the other thing. You're not even there. You've done nothing. Chicharito has done nothing to contribute to Real Madrid being at that point in the conversation, in the competition.
Right.
And so if I do score that goal, I don't pretend or act as he did that, you know, he's done it all and he's just celebrating yet another goal.
Right.
So I think, you know, I understand. I can go both ways. I understand that he's extremely excited. Right. I mean, I've lost my mind when I've scored goals before and there wasn't that many of them. And so I know how it is to not score a lot of goals in your career. Right. And when you do lose your mind. But I agree with Henri to an extent, but I think, I mean, he's being a little harsh.
Yeah.
He's being a little harsh.
Yeah. But I'm kind of sitting on the same boat as you.
Yeah.
So, the other interesting thing I thought was Sergio Ramos' move, putting him in the midfield instead of Khedira.
Yep.
Which I thought,
it's a very
good. He's going to be able to stay in there and be able to hold things down. And he did. He did a very nice job.
I thought he did. I can't stand him, though. I just have to say, I mean, he drew the red card.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously that had a huge, there. 78th minute is when he was sent off. And I mean,
and it's Arda, who's the Atletico Madrid's best player on the field.
Arda had been the best player on the day.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, he comes in. It was not a very intelligent thing for him to do when he was already sitting on a yellow. But I mean, you see that replay, and we've been in tackles like that before. He barely touched him, and it was like a missile was shot into his leg, you know. Right. And Ramos goes down. I mean, and here's the thing: if you're a guy like an Iniesta or a Xavi who doesn't kick guys and you get kicked and you go down and that's your reaction, I can understand that. But Sergio Ramos is one of the dirtiest players that there is in the world. He's made a living out of kicking guys, out of elbowing guys, out of doing dirty things. So the hypocrisy of him going down like he's been shot, you know, in war, it bothers me so much. And this guy, he bothers me so much. To me, I just always go back and I just have to say, I can't stand this guy. It's okay. He dropped the trophy under the bus. That's the only thing I can ever say about him. I can't stand him, though. I mean, he's just trying to incite these things, and there's no place for it in the game.
I think, I agree. The fact that I think it's got to stop. You keep seeing it everywhere. People always trying to draw these fouls and, you know, all these huge reactions and that kind of stuff. And it's it is silly. And I think something, you know, they could do it after the game. Post game, people look through it and kind of decide. It's kind of a fine line there about what you think hurt somebody and what didn't, you know, maybe he really did hurt his toe for 2 seconds there and it was really painful. But, you know, you look, like you said, you look at the replay and there's nothing there. Yet he's gotten a yellow card and now Atletico are down to 10 men.
Yeah.
So it is unfortunate. And I wish they would do something about cutting it out in the game. Like you're fined something or whatever it is as far as that kind of.
Well,
and then you see guys hop right back up and then right back in.
Well, yeah. And let's watch Sergio Ramos in the next game he plays. Watch when he boots somebody and let's see what he does, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's claiming, oh, I didn't touch him, you know. Right. I just don't like that, you know. I mean, if you're a hard man, then be a hard man,
right.
you know, then be one. If you're soft, then be soft. But you can't be both,
yeah.
you know, and just it bothers me. It really bothers me. But anyways, the red card did have an effect on the game, obviously. But, I thought it was Real Madrid's night.
It was Real Madrid's night. Yeah,
and they were better on the night. I thought they deserved it wholeheartedly. Yeah. And, you know, they had some big players missing.
Yep.
And, you know, the question remains, is Bale back? Is Benzema back? Is Modric back? And Modric is not back. No, he's not going to be back. But are Benzema and Bale back? Yeah, we don't know.
Close. You
know?
And Marcelo's back now as well. And so they don't have, you know, that's another player who they were missing.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it was a, you know, tip your hat to Real Madrid.
Yeah, you do have to tip your hat to them. And
not at all season.
Well, and at the end of the day, we're looking at, you know, one of the best Final Fours in the Champions League that I can remember. Yeah. I mean, it just in terms of, you know, the teams,
star,
the history of
power.
The clubs,
yeah.
the global power,
yeah.
the star power, and most importantly, the form that these teams are in, mm-hmm. because they're all in good form. Nobody's limped into this competition.
Yeah, exactly. There aren't any Cinderella surprises. It's all going to be
straightforward. It's all big clubs, great teams in form mm-hmm. with great players. So it should be great. We're going to move on. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We are consequently in Seattle. It's a cold morning here. And you can check us out on Twitter. We're at FTTL in Seattle. We just added a couple new pictures in there of Heinzen and I at a Sounders game. We're brought to you here by the Back Sports Page Radio Network. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We are also brought to you by La Rev French Bakery on top of Queen Anne. Those girls down there. Just serving up the coffee. Merci, La Rev. Yeah, merci, La Rev. So we're going to move on here, though. We're going to move on to England. We're going to go back last week and just talk about the Chelsea-Man United game. You know, it was I thought it was, you know, great match. Man United in form. Chelsea obviously in form. Is a typical Chelsea performance. They didn't see much of the ball for the first 37 minutes until Eden Hazard, likely the Barclays Premier League Player of the Year, announced his stamp on the game, you know, and I just thought it was just, you know, typical Chelsea. They were sitting in. Man United had the ball literally for the first 37 mm-hmm. minutes. Chelsea got it. They struck on the counter. I thought it was a foul on John Terry on Falcao. I thought he absolutely murdered him.
Coming through his legs like that.
Coming through everything. But the ball squeezes out there to Cesc Fabregas, played Oscar, cleverly found Hazard off a great back heel. It looked to me like Ander Herrera should have ran with Hazard. And then I thought Chris Smalling was a little slow to step. He was trying to defend the service as well, but he was a little slow to step. And Hazard just knocked it in there near post on David De Gea. You know, Hazard, I mean, he's a great player.
Yeah.
And I think he will be player of the year. I mean, he's been the best player on the best team in the league for the whole year. I don't think there's any question. But once that goal went in, you knew it was just they were going to build Camp Mourinho and defend the game out. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. And it was unfortunate early on for United. And I think for just neutrals watching the game that Rooney didn't convert that one where he slips in and he's got the whole side of the goal open and just puts it wide.
Yeah.
So that was a tough to see. You know, I thought for a while United were really getting some opportunities, finding that space right in front of them. And then they just kind of closed the gap. Zuma slides over. He had a really good game. Super defensive.
He did play well.
Exactly what Chelsea needed to do. The pressure wasn't on them, and now it's really not on them. So,
yeah,
I think that's pretty much the title race right there with that game. I think there was a sliver of hope if United get something out of this 3 points.
Yeah,
Chelsea not to play Arsenal, but I think for now it's, you know.
Well, and again, I mean, you know, we talk about the substance over style with Jose Mourinho and Chelsea. I mean, United had 70% of the possession. But at the end of the day, you really weren't able to create many clear-cut chances.
No.
Rooney had his chance. The only other time that I thought United was dangerous when I thought it was a penalty on I thought Herrera earned a penalty right there in injury time. And Mike Dean denied United the penalty. And Herrera got done for diving, got a yellow card for diving. But I thought Gary Cahill caught him. I mean,
right.
I don't know if I'm old and I'm not seeing properly, but I'm watching it even in the slow motion replay. He caught him. I don't see how it's not a penalty.
I think they're saying that Herrera stuck his leg out to try and draw it in. And I think that's what he went with.
Yeah,
it's, you know, one of those things. It's a tough call for either way, and he just wasn't going to do it. It would have been a huge, huge call. So
it would have been a huge call.
You can see it going one way, you can see it going another way.
It's fair. Well, you know, Chelsea. You know, they're now 10 points clear Arsenal. The Premier League title looks to be heading back to Stamford Bridge for the first time in 5 years, and Chelsea can all but seal that fate on Sunday when they travel to the Emirates and take on Arsenal. You know, Arsene Wenger is going to be hoping to stay alive with a victory, which mathematically would be very possible. But you know, Chelsea, aside from their remaining match visit from Liverpool, they don't really have too tough of a schedule. Arsenal's got to travel to Old Trafford in a few weeks. And then they've got to, you know, Arsenal after this, they've got to host Sunderland, West Brom, and Villa in their final three matches, all hungry teams that are, you know, kind of near the relegation zone. So, you know, big game, I think, Arsenal-Chelsea coming up this weekend. But I think Chelsea can really seal it right here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And if they don't, I don't think they're going to be that worried. They got Leicester after that. Which they can, you know, Leicester's still fine for their life and doing quite well, actually. But, yeah, it's not a do or die. I think Mourinho's going to do the exact same thing, sit everybody back there. It's a different Arsenal, though, than when they saw in the fall that they beat 2-0. It's a different one. Coquelin's kind of changed things. I think defensively, Arsenal are much more difficult.
Yes.
They're running on confidence. I think they've won like 9 in a row. They're in the FA Cup final. Wenger's never beaten Mourinho.
It's unbelievable that he's never beat him.
Yeah, it's like 7. I think they tied 5 times or something like that. It's just hilarious.
It's just fantastic.
So he's kind of,
I love that.
You know you would love
Mourinho. Yes. Arsene, you have never beat Jose. well, I mean, and for Mourinho, Heinz is here in the studio doing his best Arsene Wenger impersonation. It sounds like he has a croissant in his mouth. Mourinho, I mean, his love affair with Chelsea, with London, with the Premier League. I mean, it's gonna come to back to fruition here with his third title, his first since he went back to back in 2005 and 2006. And you know, you got to hand it to Mourinho. I don't like the way Chelsea play. I don't like many of their players, but he's got a system and he's got a way about him that his players believe in him 1,000%. And I mean, look what he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, look what he's done literally everywhere he's gone, even at Porto.
Yeah.
He's everywhere he's gone. He figures it out. And you know, I mean, he figures out ways tactically to win games, and it's a lot of times it's, you know, it's not pretty tactically, but it's always effective. Right. And you know, you just got to hand it to him. I think Chelsea is on their way to the title, and if Dave Heilman is listening to this, he's going to be happy to hear me admit that. But congratulations, Dave. Enjoy it.
Yeah, it's they won't have Costa either, but you know, Didier Drogba will probably be in the mix. Arsenal never like playing him. And what's also cool about this game is Cesc Fabregas returns for the first time.
You're right.
Which actually Mourinho sent out a tweet or something about it saying, kind of like, I think a stick to Arsenal, like, we'll be building our team around Cesc. Sorry, I don't want that figure. But I mean, you know, that's classic Mourinho, kind of winding him up maybe a little bit. But
oh, of course it is. And of course, I mean, Wenger's going to be the one to bite on it. He'll bite on it like three hooks went in his mouth. I mean, the guy is just, it's unreal. I mean, nice. I would like to see Arsenal win.
I would too.
Because I would like to see it get a little interesting. But I'd also like to see Arsenal lose because I want to see the look on Wenger's face when he's walking out the field realizing he still hasn't beat Mourinho.
I know that guy. I have to hand it to him. He really has self-control, it looks like, at times. Even when his ship's sinking,
it's great. Well, we do have quite a race going on at the top and at the bottom of the league. I mean, with Arsenal, I mean, we talk about Arsenal. Arsenal, United, and City are all within 2 points of each other. You know, the battle for second, third, and fourth is really wide open. You know, Arsenal obviously have to deal with Chelsea this weekend. United travel to Everton. And City are going to host an in-form Aston Villa and their sideshow manager, Tim Sherwood. I think, out of those second, third, and fourth, City looks like the one that could potentially melt down a little bit and could potentially slip out of that top four. Maybe. Let's talk about the next three teams there. We've got Liverpool, Tottenham, Southampton all sitting there in the Europa Cup spots and just right on the verge. They're all right there. Tottenham, Southampton, obviously they play this weekend on Saturday. Going to be a great game. Yeah. And while a struggling and embattled Liverpool squad travels to Birmingham to take on West Brom, a team that's flirting with relegation and have a lot to play for, what are your thoughts on this group of three teams right there?
Yeah, I think Spurs are looking good. They had a great game last week, you know, getting Harry Kane and getting another goal for him. You know, it's going to be tough. They're obviously playing Newcastle United. We're still struggling right now. You get Chadley involved. Yeah, Eriksen gets a goal. Kane gets a goal. I think Spurs have the best opportunity. Southampton blew it against Stoke City. Losing like that, you can't expect to get into the top, especially to get into the top four. But, you know, they still have a chance. They can make it right here with Spurs. But I think Spurs are the hottest team right now. Liverpool are on the downslide. Spurs and Liverpool both tied at 57 points.
Yep.
So
Liverpool does have a game in hand.
Yeah, they do have a game in hand.
They do have a game in hand. I also think, yeah, we talk about Liverpool being embattled and they're going through all these trouble, but they're always a team that is capable of pulling out. Coutinho is on fire right now. Coutinho is playing very well. You know, we'll talk about the FA Cup semifinal here in a little bit, but you know, he got another goal in that match. Mm-hmm. And he's been very good in the past month. He's been one of the top players in the league. So, you know, he can produce at any point. I think it's going to be, for me, I really think there's a chance City could drop out of that top four and one of these teams could bump in. I do think so. But it will be interesting. I mean, a lot of it's going to, you know, it comes down to who they're playing in these last games. And, you know, I think the worst teams to play are these teams in the relegation zone because they've got so much to play for. I mean, I'd rather be playing a Stoke or a Crystal Palace or, you know, teams that are maybe they're looking at some younger guys. They're not going to jump up in the table. They're not going to jump down. So maybe they're trying to look at some youth. Maybe they're, you know, there's not as much to play for there. So I think that, you know, for instance, the Liverpool having to play West Brom in Birmingham. I mean, I think that's a tough game at this time of year.
They play Hull right after that.
Yeah, they do.
Make up next week. So,
right.
I think for me, how they're going and how Brendan Rodgers will kind of pull them back in. My feeling is Liverpool and Tottenham end up finishing in fifth and sixth spots.
Yeah.
And I think City will be able to hang on, have the quality to finish in fourth place. I think that's kind of where they are. The only switches I think that will happen towards the end. It's not that exciting as Man U switches with Arsenal. It's a potential.
Right.
But Arsenal right now have a game in hand.
But nothing that's going to affect any Champions League or Europa League spots.
No big change. I think Southampton, I think that game against Stoke, they scored early. Then they let Stoke back into the game. The unfortunate goal, if you've seen that goal, that hits off the bar and goes straight to Diouf.
Yes.
And right in. It was like that looping.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do there as a defender? But, they let Stoke back in. They lose 3 points there. I think Southampton are kind of just – they're just hanging on at the last little bit. And I think they're going to run out of steam.
Well, it's, you know,
fine, we'll see.
This is what we live for, you know, are these kinds of things. I think it's going to be fantastic. But at the bottom of the league, things are heating up quite nicely for a good old fashioned relegation battle here, Heinzo. We've got the bottom five teams within 3 points of each other, and literally anything could happen at this point. It's going to kick off Saturday when Burnley hosts Leicester. But we're also going to be watching Hull City, who travels to Palace. QPR, who they're hosting a London derby with West Ham, and Sunderland, who visits Stoke. And then, you know, if you go into the week, on Tuesday, you've got Hull hosting Liverpool. And on Wednesday, you've got Leicester hosting Chelsea, which also could throw a wrinkle into the situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is literally wide open.
Right.
This is literally wide open. And Leicester, who we said were dead three weeks ago, they're right in the mix. And they've maybe got, besides this game, with Chelsea, in terms of the level of competition they're playing, they might have the easiest run out of all of these five teams.
Yeah, they're definitely cheering for Chelsea to wrap things up against Arsenal so they can kind of cool things, I think, against Leicester.
Right.
So that's definitely not a game to look over for Chelsea, but Leicester City, they are right there. I thought they were dead. I thought they were absolutely not going to get anything done.
I don't think they've lost in five games.
They're racking in the wins, putting themselves right back in the picture. Huge, massive game against Burnley. Burnley know it as well.
It's a huge game.
Yeah, they went down, this last week, losing their game. Burnley 1-0 to Everton.
Yeah,
it was. And it was just, they went down to 10 men late. So Burnley are kind of on the back heels at the moment. It switches every week. I mean, Hull City, they've had poor run of form. So it's tough to call.
Well, and even with those five teams within 3 points of each other, you've still got Villa there. I mean, yeah, if Villa lose
to Man City, yeah, then they're right back in.
Right, and if West Brom loses, you know, to Liverpool, right, they're right back in the mix as well. And Newcastle is right there as well. Right. So,
but that's a Tony Pulis West Brom team. I mean, I think it's something. They just smacked Crystal Palace. I think.
Yeah, they did. That was a surprise. Yeah.
So it's he's got them going.
Yeah, he does. He does. And he's a master at keeping them.
Yeah. And keeping people in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. So, going to be interesting. That's for sure. And, the Premier League is just it's just heating up right now on both sides of the table. And next week, we're gonna talk about the promotion battle going on in the championship, which is something else that's just extraordinary right now. Yeah, it's extraordinary. It's the amount of teams that are in there. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heinzen on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're here on Back Sports Page Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. We're on Twitter at FTTL in Seattle. And just got some new pictures up there. You can follow us on Twitter. And every Friday morning, we're here at 9 a.m. And we almost had to move the show this morning because Aaron is taking his EMT course.
Sure am.
He postponed that to next Thursday. But, you know, it's getting a little dangerous here in the studio. Safety first is our motto here from Safety the Touchline. And and so we've got Heinzen getting his EMT done. So just in case anything happens here.
Put your sunscreen on, wear your seatbelt.
Exactly. We're going to move on to the MLS. We're bringing on Pete Fewing here in just a few minutes to talk MLS. Pete Fewing, Seattle Sounders FC TV personality, Seattle U men's head coach. Great guy. Looking forward to having him on. But first, we're going to talk a little Montreal Impact, who, while they haven't won a match in the MLS yet, they're heading back into the second leg of the CONCACAF Champions League final in Montreal, tied 1-1 after a 1-1 draw against Club America at Azteca Stadium in front of over 100,000 fans at altitude with everybody smoking packs of cigarettes and not being able to breathe. Unbelievable what Montreal is doing right now. This is incredible.
Well, it's no doubt that you're no surprise they haven't won a game yet in the MLS. I mean, they're giving this their every bit of concentration and focus. So, yeah, that is actually kind of understandable. It's not like they have a massive squad, a big enough squad that they can just rotate people around like some other teams. So, you know, really exciting for them. And especially the fact that now they have to play it at home. So,
well, yeah, and
I was not able to see the game on Wednesday, so I can't speak too much to what they have to do or what their options are. But still, like you said, Azteca Stadium, that is one of the most intimidating stadiums in the world.
It's one of the worst places to play, unless you're Mexican, in the world.
It is
no
very
question.
Difficult. Very impressive.
Well, in 16 minutes in, I mean, they set the tone. Argentine striker Ignacio Piatti, puts them on the board 1-0. And I mean, here's Club America thinking that they're going to run through them and they're going to get the aggregate up. And here, it wasn't until an 89th minute equalizer from Old Oribe Peralta, who scored his his share of goals, salvaged the tie for the home side. He almost scored again in injury time, which would have put him up 2-1. And would have reminded Montreal of 2009 and Kevin Sakuda. Sorry, Kev. Now we're heading back to Montreal, April 29th. And Montreal has a chance to become the first Canadian club to win this competition. I think something that would be extremely significant for Frank Klopas and that entire organization.
Oh, absolutely. Canadian soccer in general. I mean, the last time I think I remember Canada doing something in soccer, it was they won the Gold Cup back in the 90s at some point in time. Craig Forrest, I believe, was in goal. Remember Craig Forrest?
Yeah, I do remember Craig Forrest.
So that was a long time ago.
Wow.
I mean, so Montreal, it's exciting, and it's a club that's been around for a long time there, and what an achievement. You think Club America, how storied they are and what a big team they are, and the money they have, and the fact that they've, drawn with them 1-1, and that's
– Yeah. Well, and a couple little notes on the game here. Club America's got a Clasico this weekend with Chivas. Chivas leading the league. And it's a big game for Club America, and they've got to really decide on how they're going to split this squad because, you might say the Champions League is is more important, but you don't live in Mexico and understand how passionate these fans are. And they've got to, you know, they've got to really manage that, you know, well, Montreal's goalkeeper, something weird happened after the game. He was issued a yellow card. He has to sit the second leg as well. Unfortunate for that. But, you know, I think it should be interesting going back in, you know, into Montreal. And they've got a real chance to do something really special. I mean, can you see the Montreal Impact in the World Club Cup?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's a very exciting opportunity.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we haven't won a game in the MLS, but we're going to be playing Real Madrid, right? And I think whoever else.
The, you know, they want to get through this first, and thank goodness it's going to be over before the MLS season really, really gets going.
Yeah,
because you know you're dragged into something like this halfway through the summer, and you know they're not going into the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think also, but I just you know, it's good for the MLS. Obviously, it's good for the league.
Absolutely.
You know, there really haven't been many non-Mexican teams that have won this competition,
right?
And so for us, you know. For our league, the MLS, to have this happening, I think it's exciting, and it says a lot about the job that you know, Frank Klopas has done there, because Montreal has always been a club that is up in arms at all times. I mean, you've got Joey Saputo, the owner there, who's all over the shop. You've got, you know, Jesse March was in there, you know, and he was sacked out, and now Klopas comes in, and you know, very. Just a great job. So you got Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines in here on From the Touchline in Seattle. We're on Blog Talk Radio and the Back Sports Page Radio Network. We're here. We're just about to bring on Pete Fewing, Seattle Sounders FC TV personality and Seattle University head coach. And we're just going to click him on here. And Pete, do we have you here?
Yeah, you do, Todd.
Yeah, you do, Todd. Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great. Pete, thanks for coming on. Just, you know, real happy to have you here. We're just talking MLS, Pete. We just got done talking about the unlikely event of Montreal being in the Champions League final against Club America, coming back 1-1. But we want to move on and talk about a big match happening here in Seattle, a big match in the league, Seattle-Portland, a huge rivalry. And you got two teams that are looking, you know, the Western Conference is tight, and you got two teams really looking to, these 3 points are very important, despite the rivalry at this point, Pete. These are very important 3 points on the table this weekend.
Yeah, Seattle's got one last game played.
You're coming in and out just a little bit.
Ooh. How about now?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's much better.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Okay. This game always the locker rooms of each team, but quite a lot of dislike. They weren't playing away from each other. Seattle was playing Portland with 9, and Seattle has one game in the draft in hand. So it's kind of one of those games that we said last year.
Yeah, well, clearly, and it looks like Chad Marshall's suspension came down today. Yeah. He'll be out for the game. Very unfortunate. You think we'll see Zach Scott slide in there with Brad Evans at center back?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Right, and I think if you're entering into a match where you know, might know that there might be some physicality and some hard play and some hard tackles, Zach Scott really isn't a bad guy to have in the mix.
No, he brings that fire for sure. And he's not afraid to get physical. The big thing for that because he's an emotional player.
Experience.
He's just got to make sure he doesn't give up an early yellow card.
Yeah. Or an early red card.
I think he's going to be that physical presence. Brad will not be that physical presence necessarily. That's not his style. So they need Zach to really play with himself.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and you know, you're there at training right now. Obviously, Clint Dempsey will be in the fold for this. Him and Obafemi Martins up top. How are we looking in midfield? Are we dealing with Pineda and Ozzie Alonso, or what are we looking like in the middle of the park there?
Yeah, I think it'll be Great for Lamar, you know, he was pretty open about playing Marston and getting off the ground, trying to play a little better, and he didn't get a goal, and the two goals against Colorado really good. I think I've been really impressed with Andy Rose for me.
Right, definitely. Well, and I would say, you know, now you've got, you know, obviously with Dempsey and Martins, I mean, I think Nagel will push wide on one side. Do you think Papa stays out on the other side?
Yeah, I do. But I think he's on the short end. I think he's on the short end. Because we have too many guys on the bench ready to come in. So I think you face that with Papa and Nagel wide.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, we've got I got Aaron Hines in here, former Portland Timber. So we're you know, we're having a little little battle royale here in the studio. I'm talking about my dislike for Caleb Porter. I'm just gonna keep bringing up that Caleb Porter failed to get the USA in the Olympics. That's my only thing I can hold on to. But yeah, Aaron's got a couple questions here.
I gotta go with the Timbers on this one, Pete. You know, I wish him the best. But you know, being living up here in Seattle for so long, it's kind of I just want to see a great game. A little neutral answer
for you. I played for the Huskies and watched the Venom between the Cougars and Timbers. I never got into that. So for you, if you live in Seattle, you just want to see a big game.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a quick question for you. I don't know if you've seen the Timbers play with Darren Aspria, that guy. He's on the wing for the Portland Timbers. Scored the goal against New York City last week. I'm just wondering how that matchup would be. Is it going to be Remick again on the left, or are they going to what are your thoughts on that?
Right. That's good. Well, let's move on. Let's head up north, Pete, because when we talk about the Cascadia rivalry, Vancouver Whitecaps are in there. They've always kind of been the little cousin that hasn't really done well in out of these three teams. But here you find them at the top of the Western Conference. They're on fire. They're playing so very well. Hosting DC United on Saturday, a big game for them. What are your thoughts on the Vancouver Whitecaps and what they've been able to put together up there just across the border?
Well, they love playing for their coach. I think that's one of the big things. And he's now put his personality into the team. They buy into him. And I think in MLS, I think that's a huge factor. Like in New York, they were disappointed to lose Mike Petchy. Now they seem to be rolling and buying in. So the coach-player relationship is super important. And it's got to be a relationship where the coach has to respect the guy. And I think everybody's finalizing it. I think
Vancouver put together. Yeah. Well, it sure is impressive what they've been able to do. You know, I mean, I think it'll be interesting as the season goes on if they're able to sustain that, you know, because obviously it's one thing to come out of the gates and play well, but you know, a lot of these teams, especially in the Western Conference, we know LA Galaxy is going to get better and better as the year goes on. I think a lot of these teams are going to get better and better as the year goes on. And it'll be interesting to see if Vancouver's able to sustain this playing level and be able to sustain you know that lead at the top of the Western Conference. It is a tight battle. It's a tight race. Yeah. And yeah. We don't think Vancouver is going to be able to hold it, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. But isn't that interesting when you look at
I like Los Angeles a lot. I like their weapons over the second half of the season. When LA and then when LA play again, that will be a more true test of how postseason is going to go.
Right. That's a good point.
Everybody has that in mind.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, Pete, we're gonna move on here with the show. We got to get going. We got a couple other things to cover. We sure appreciate having you on. We'd love to bring you on again. And you can have fun out there at Starfire. It's a little chilly. I hope you got a good jacket and a hat. It's a little chilly here, man.
When I left my house, I always have a car, and I'm very pleased I've got it now. Okay. All right, Pete Fewing, thanks so much for coming on.
Enjoy the game this week, this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Pete.
Okay, thanks, you guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's great. We had a little problem on a sound. I apologize to the listeners there. If it makes you feel any better, we couldn't really understand what he was saying either. So we were trying to have a conversation with him. It was a little difficult, but great insight. I think, you know, the gist of it, obviously from Pete, it's going to be a great game this weekend. Portland, Seattle, throw everything out the window in terms of stats and everything else. It's just going to be a bloodbath.
Absolutely.
It should be.
And that's good. I like his points too about the Whitecaps second meeting with LA is going to be more representative of exactly what those kind of teams are looking for and what kind of consistency they'll have about that point in time. So, always nice to have Pete Fewing. Always nice to chat with him.
Yeah, no, it's great. And again, not sure where he was calling us from. I think he was sitting inside of a drainage ditch or a tunnel. But because we're getting two voices, or there's two of them. But it is. We really appreciate Pete coming on. Great guy. What a great soccer figure here in Seattle. He's just done so much for the game here in Seattle. And great to have him on. We'll have him on again, and hopefully we can hear him next time. That'd be our preference. We're just gonna go through here couple quick topics. We're just gonna run through a couple quick things here and
quick topic time.
I'm gonna give you something and you tell me what you think about it. FA Cup semifinal, Arsenal 2-1 over Reading, massive blunder from Reading goalkeeper Adam Federici, Alexis Sanchez 2 goals. Thoughts?
Congratulations to Arsenal. Unlucky Reading, really unlucky for Federici. Cool. What a way to send your team out. But you know, congrats to Arsenal, and I wish them all the best.
Yeah, and Arsene Wenger heading to a cup final. I will be in the FA Cup final at Wembley. Aston Villa 2-1 over Liverpool on goals from Fabian Delph, a red hot Christian Benteke. It was a difficult match. Villa manager Tim Sherwood has spent much of the second half celebrating in the stands with the fans. Thoughts, Heinzen?
Nice dancing, Tim Sherwood. Is Benteke going to stay at Villa? I don't know. After this performance this season, he's been on people's radar. I think this is the end, especially if Villa kind of collapse in the Premier League and go down the Championship, no question. But exciting for Villa. Excellent game that they played against Liverpool, and a team that could be quite intimidating with Brendan Rodgers. And congratulations to Brendan Rodgers, first coach in the history since the 50s not to win a trophy at Liverpool.
So yeah, that's great. That's tough. Unlucky.
On that topic, I think Brendan Rodgers does stay at Liverpool. They're not going to change him in anybody else.
No, I don't think so either. One little note on Tim Sherwood. He's got 2 job opportunities. If he wins this FA Cup final, he stays at Villa. If he loses, Prince Harry is hiring him as his personal jester. Just dance around, Timmy. Dance around. Come on. You're my jester. This guy is, to me, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable to me. I understand you got a chip on your shoulder. I understand you maybe weren't treated well at Tottenham. You did a good job. You're doing a good job here. You're winning, but you're not the only manager on the planet winning. There's a lot of guys winning. You don't see Louis van Gaal You don't see him dancing around at Old Trafford. You don't see I would like to see it. You don't see Mourinho dancing around. You know, you don't see Pep Guardiola dancing around at the Allianz. This guy is just, it's just too much at this point. It is just too much. I can't handle it. I can't take any more of it.
Well, you know, then you'll be cheering for Arsenal, I guess.
Man. Yeah, I'm going to be, again, I have to cheer for Arsenal. This is awful. This is so bad. Next topic, Jordan Morris. We talked about him a lot last week. Scored again for the U23s against Mexico, 3-0 win for the U.S. against Mexico. Thoughts?
Ah, he's red hot. He's got Mexico's number right now. Jordan Morris, congratulations. Sounds like he's staying at Stanford as well. So.
Yep, he will be staying at Stanford.
Smart kid with quick feet.
Smart kid, quick feet. He's a big boy. We know that. Well, we talked about that. Next topic, Jurgen Klopp doesn't want to go to the Premier League, he's saying. Where does he go then?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. There's so many options. It's going to be tough. You know, he's probably not going to go to Real Madrid. Ancelotti, if he loses the Champions League final and doesn't go, is Ancelotti going to be gone? But is Klopp going to be the man to replace him? I mean, my head's just dancing. Paris Saint-Germain going to win 3 trophies, but do they keep Larry White? We don't really know. Or Laurent Blanc.
Larry White.
You know, you just never know.
Larry White.
Jurgen Klopp, obviously the most talented manager so far open.
Yeah.
But Simeone's staying. Man City, he even said he doesn't want to go to Man City, Jurgen Klopp. So
no.
It'll be interesting. There's always an Italian opportunity. Plenty of.
I don't know if I'm Jurgen Klopp if I want to go to Italy right now. But my question to you is, why does he not want to come to the Premier League? Why do you think that is?
It
seems like the next natural step.
The next stop. Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure why Klopp wouldn't want to go. I mean, it's one of the biggest leagues, or the biggest league in the world. Why you wouldn't want to test yourself? Maybe he doesn't like the fact that, you know, managers do get shuffled in and out so quickly there, especially as a guy just coming over. If he doesn't win right away, you know, what's going to happen to him? I don't think he quite trusts that. So, but you know, you're playing at the top now. He's made a name for himself at Dortmund, did a really excellent job. But, you know, is he the kind of guy that wants to sign, you know, a quick little 2-year deal and get rushed out? I don't see him like that.
Yeah, so, I see him more as a guy who wants to go somewhere where he's going to be long term. Yeah,
make a mark. So,
well, and so that, I mean, clearly that would leave Real Madrid out as well. Because, I mean, listen, look at what Ancelotti's doing. And we're talking about him getting the sack if he loses the Champions League after everything he's done. I don't know if that's the situation he wants to be in. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. Next question, who's the first coach to get the sack in the offseason?
I think it's going to be Laurent Blanc if he doesn't.
Larry White?
I think Larry White's going to get the sack. Yeah, I think no question. And I think it was going to be Roberto Martinez, but I think he's got Everton turned around.
Yeah, he does have him turned around. But wait a second, hold on. Larry White's going to win 3 trophies in France potentially, and he's going to get sacked.
Well, that's, you know, they want to win the Champions League. They spent a lot of money, and I think going, I mean, even though they did go out against Barcelona, they just didn't look like they were ever even in the game.
Well, they weren't because they had their best players out.
So I think it's a possibility he could go. I also think Ancelotti's name is up there. He could not win a trophy this year for all that they've done.
So, yeah, that's true.
I think that's going to be a big deal. Ancelotti could get the boot as well.
I'm going to throw Brendan Rodgers in there as well.
You're kidding.
I just want to throw him in there just for a topic of conversation. Just imagine if Liverpool, in their last, they have 8 games, I think, or 7. Mm-hmm. If they melt down, let's say they only win 2 of those.
Mm-hmm. Then I agree with that.
And the other thing I'm looking at is he's coming out in the media saying that he's the best man for the job. Uh-huh. I think that seems a little strange to me that he'd be the one coming out to say that in the media,
tooting
his own horn, saying, hey, I'm the guy. I don't know about that. I think he's obviously, if he's doing that, he's feeling a little unsettled.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some things going on behind the scenes that we aren't sure about or don't know about. So
I think, I think Rodgers will stay, personally. I think Andres Villas-Boas is always good for a new
job. Oh, gosh. Where is
he now? Now he's out of Europa League. Yeah, he's in Zenit St. Petersburg.
Oh, yeah, is he? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they're out of the Europa League now, so he could be on to something else as well.
Andres Villas-Boas. I can't believe he just brought that. Basically, he got sent to Siberia. He was in such desolation and then somehow just wandered into Zenit. Hey, I can coach this team. Oh my!
Speaking of Klopp, though, that they have a great matchup: Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund next Tuesday for the German Cup semifinal, which is very exciting. Man, you know, Bayern have their hands full already.
Well, and you talk about managing matches, managing the amount of games that you have to play. As we talked about, Bayern's going to have to manage that. Of course, luckily he's got the squad to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to say Bayern wins 2-1, but it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, it will be a tough game.
Jordan's last gasp, Klopp's last season. So.
Well, it was a great week of soccer. It's going to be a great week ahead of us. We've got a bunch of Premier League games, little break from the Champions League, but it's going to be fantastic. And I thought the show was great, you know. Great to have Pete Viewing on.
Absolutely.
Great, great topics of conversation. You got Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines in here on From the Touchline in Seattle. You can catch us every week, 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific time. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We are on the Back Sports Page Radio Network. And we're also on Twitter at FTTL in Seattle. Follow us on Twitter. Great week. We will... Sounders Timbers on Sunday. It's going to be a great one. And we'll catch you next week. Have a good week.